This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
Every mother has a birth story. And for women, this is something that will stay with you forever. Whether your birth was natural, had all the drugs, was a C-section, an elective C-section, a delivery that involved dolphins and a birth pool, it's good to keep in mind it's your story. And what you choose to celebrate or to mourn is, again, it's all your story. There's a bit of judgment around about caesarean sections. There is the fact that we do have a very high rate of caesareans here in Australia. It's believed that one in three births is a C-section, much higher than the World Health Organization would like to see. But does the stigma around admitting you had or wanted to have a caesarean stop women from finding the information they need to make an informed choice about a C-section birth? Dr. James Orford is an obstetrician and gynaecologist in private and public practice on the Sunshine Coast, at the Sunshine Coast University Hospital and at Budrum Private Hospital. And this week, we're going to meet a friend and colleague of mine, Prue Bentley, who is going to talk us through her birth story. Dr. Orford, a lot of women say that there is a lot that they weren't expecting when it comes to having a caesarean section. You're hoping to change that.
Caesarean section, as I'm sure you're aware, is, for better or worse, is becoming a more and more common thing. I think the last Australia-wide data is saying around about one in three babies are born by caesarean section these days. Some of those will be planned with the need or the preference for it being identified during pregnancy, and some of those the need doesn't become apparent until labour's underway. I think the ones that the indication is not apparent until labour's underway are always going to be a little bit less prepared, because you don't want to spend too much of your time, I think, preparing for an event you don't want to have happen. So that's a bit of a challenge for obstetrician is to have those women not wanting a caesarean section, not planning a caesarean section, to be adequately informed, because hard to go through it all in the midst of labour. But certainly the women who are planning a caesarean section for a medical reason or due to preference, I think the opportunity is definitely there to prepare them as much as possible.
Let's meet Prue, who has a story that may sound fairly familiar, one that started out with all the best will in the world to have a completely natural birth, until things weren't going so well.
I walked all the way home from the hospital, and I started my labour on the way home from a hospital. It was very mild at the time, but by the time I got home, I was getting 5-minute contractions, pretty mild. Within a couple of hours, they'd really progressed, and I was in some pretty serious pain, and we decided to go back to the hospital again for the second time that day. They admitted me to a birthing suite straight away because they could see that I was in real labour, and my contractions were very frequent and pretty strong. So that continued for quite some time, and I had said that I wanted to try for a pain relief free birth as much as possible. I was one of those mums. and we did that. We did that for quite some time. It went on and on and on. And after about 10 hours, they came in and checked on me based on what they'd been hearing and seeing and witnessing, that I would be quite some way along, and then discovered that neither my waters had broken nor had I dilated any more than I had when I walked through the door 10 hours earlier,
blimey.
Which was incredibly disappointing, but it was more than that. I was just exhausted and so over it by then that I did say, look, give me all the drugs.
Give me all the drugs. No shame.
I've had it.
Prue, no shame in this at all.
No, not at all. And it's so funny thinking back on it. You do have these ideas about the perfect birth, and we had a plan, but it was a flexible plan. We knew it wasn't necessarily going to go exactly the way we wanted it. So we kind of moved with the times by then, and they kind of let me go for a little bit longer. And then the obstetrician came in and did some tests and said, your baby is in distress. The heart rate is plummeting and rising and plummeting, and we have no visibility because you're nowhere near actually giving birth.
Apparently it's still very beneficial for a woman to have been through labour, like at least starting labour. It brings in some of the hormones and things that you don't get with a planned C-section.
Yeah, that's I think that's a true statement. So we know that labour and contractions during labour have some mildly stressful effects on a fetus, and we think that that triggers a few release of cortisol type things and catecholamines that seem to be useful in particularly preparing their lungs for life outside the womb. And so certainly a planned cesarean section that's had no contractions prior, we do see a little bit higher rates of babies having to be admitted to the special care nursery with retained fluid on their lungs, or maybe even premature type lung conditions, and also can be lessened by doing the cesarean section at an appropriate time late enough in the pregnancy.
It's good to know for everybody who did at least start labour that it wasn't, as they say, in vain. It was still really good for you
yes.
and for your baby. But
yes.
for the rest of us that fall into a planned cesarean, and I was one of those being an older mother, I don't think my obstetrician wanted to take chances. How do you prepare for cesarean? And I'm going in the category of, I'm sure I was told a lot, I don't know how much I took in.
Yes. Interesting. I know that one of my patients was interviewed on this topic, and I was surprised to hear one or two of the comments that I said. I thought to myself, I'm pretty sure we covered that topic, but we know that probably 50% of what you hear in a consultation is forgotten before you leave the door. So it's about having that conversation repeatedly and maybe giving some written information about it as well. But yeah, I think the things that you perhaps want to be thinking about are the pros and cons of having a cesarean section versus a vaginal birth, and there's certainly pros and cons to each. So having that discussion with your obstetrician is very important. I think the timing of when you're going to have your elective cesarean section is very important. So even though we've just finished saying that there are some benefits to starting labour, that it does, on the downside, it does turn your planned event into an unplanned event, and it could mean that there are some risks of early labour that we'd prefer some women especially not to go through, such as if it's a placenta previa and we really don't want labour to start because the risk of bleeding becomes very high at that point, or maybe certain types of presentations, or baby, the way the baby is lying, we really don't want labour to start. But even those things aside, it's turning a planned event where there's time for anaesthetists to take their time and put in a nice calm epidural, and no one's rushing and no one's stressed to 2 a.m. in the morning trying to do something quickly. So we do also know that there are higher rates of infections, complications and bleeding complications when caesars are done as an emergency rather than planned. So we're trying to get that nice balance that we want to book the cesarean section date late enough that the baby is probably fine and ready to be born, not so late that there's a high chance of labour starting before the day. And certainly the Australian College of O&G has a guideline around that that says somewhere around 39 weeks is probably a pretty good compromise between those two things.
But that was not going to be the case for Prue. Her obstetrics team let her know that she was in line for an emergency C-section.
So they made the decision right then and there to do an emergency C-section, which was totally not part of my plan. But by then I was so unable to make any decision for myself because I had been in quite a lot of pain. I was exhausted. I kind of said, well, that if that's what we've got to do, that's what we've got to do.
What did you know about cesarean sections before this point?
Well, I had been to some of the birth training and they had talked a little bit about it, but the midwife who delivered that educational session was really strong on saying, look, we want C-sections to be for emergencies. We think that natural birth is the better way to go. But I didn't expect it because my birth had been deemed low risk all the way through. So I just sort of blithely went on thinking, well, this is, I'm going to go down this path and this is going to be my birth and I'm low risk and all of these sorts of things. And then, of course, you know, life happens, doesn't it?
It does. When it comes to explaining what's going to happen in a C-section, there are some gory details in there.
Yes.
But how do you explain, because especially if it's planned, you've got time for an epidural?
And I think, again, without getting too much into models of care and public and private and obstetric and midwifery, I think mostly I am in private practice up on the Sunshine Coast, and one of the, I think, advantages of that is I get to see my patients 6, 10, 12 times during a pregnancy, and it leaves lots of time to discuss this stuff. You give some information at one visit and another at some more at the next. But certainly when it comes to Plan Caesar, we go through step by step. This would be an operating table. That's where the anaesthetist will be standing. This is where I'll be standing. The process is that we'll have the epidural, then we'll move you in, and then we'll pop a catheter in, and then we'll prep your tummy, and I'll give them some idea around timing of what it takes, to how much time it takes to deliver the baby and then to close up again. And, you know, we try very hard here to not separate mothers and babies. As long as baby comes out well, we usually put them straight on mum's chest and have that early skin to skin and don't separate them, take them to recovery together, take them to the ward together. So I think it's about preparing all those things that they know what's going to happen. We plan Caesar, we let them choose the music they want to listen to and a few things like that. And it's usually going over those details a number of times. It helps to cement it in their preparation.
Do you remember much about what happened during the procedure? Did you have sort of time to analyse it?
Well, we had to wait for an anaesthetist, so I had a lot of time to think about it beforehand. I had probably over an hour once they had made that decision, probably even 2 hours actually, while I was still in labour, waiting for somebody to come and give me the epidural so I could go into theatre, and they were prepping for theatre. So I had a few hours to get used to the idea,
yeah.
I have to say. And I cannot fault the team. They were incredible. It was sort of 8 o'clock in the morning and they were bright, they were bubbly. There was a cast of thousands in there welcoming me into theatre, prepping me for theatre. And I think they knew that they needed to keep my spirits up and my husband's spirits up. And they were wonderful. But it was going from a dark room where I was going through all of this sort of painful labour and then being whisked out onto a gurney into this bright, bright room with beeps and all sorts of machines and people grinning at me with you know, knives in their hands. And it was a real shift.
And the other thing that took me completely by surprise was how much I could feel during the C-section, because that was really unusual, because I said, I can feel what you're doing. And they said, have you got pain? I was like, no, there's no, but it was, you could sort of feel a lot of pushing and tugging and...
Yes, I've heard people say it's, you can feel people rummaging around. the anaesthetists go to some lengths to explain that it's, an analogy I often use is a bit like going to the dentist, and when you get your local to have your filling done, and for the next couple of hours, if you pinch your lip really hard, you can't feel it, but if you wobble your lip, you can feel it moving. So it's that sensation that it takes away temperature, takes away sharp pain, but it doesn't take away the sensation of movement happening. And I think it's really important to prepare women for that feeling, because someone who's particularly nervous about the whole thing might even start to interpret that sensation of movement as pain.
Yes.
So being well prepared for that, and I think it's also about trying to minimise that movement and being as gentle as you can to minimise that sensation is all important.
All kudos to my team. They were lovely and fantastic. I'm not complaining at all, but I think they were trying to minimise the hole the baby was coming out of. That involves a bit of manoeuvring to get that to happen.
It does. Yes, yeah, quite a firm push on your sort of rib cage area just at the moment of, so the assistant sort of pushing quite firmly so that the head then delivers out through the incisions. It's like a weight on your chest at that point.
There is quite a bit of abdominal work that needs to be done to put everything back together again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the most of the surgery. I mean, we usually quote somewhere around about 5 minutes to get the baby born, another half hour or so to close up again. So 90% of the time is actually the closure of all those layers that we open to get the baby born. So yeah, there are a number of layers that need closing, and all of them are important. We take our time with each one.
Is this something that is very standardised in the way things are done, or do you get to pick your obstetrician and...
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of subtle differences on how many layers there's over the decades. There's been one or two layers that we've sort of come to realise perhaps don't need to be actually formally closed. There are some very much black and white, you've got to close that layer, you've got to close that layer. And I suppose one of the things that becomes important to patients will be what is my surgeon going to do with the skin closure? Because that's the bit you can see from the outside, and obviously everyone is slightly concerned about how it's going to look afterwards and where the scar is going to be and how disfiguring will it look and so on.
Do you tend to have stitches hanging out, or what's...
Again, so there's a number of ways to close incisions. You know, you can use staples, you can use stitches that need to be removed again, you can use stitches that just dissolve by themselves, you can use stitches that just hide just under the skin, and then again, what sort of dressings you put on top of it. And so there are various ways. I think that you'd find that quite a large percentage of obstetricians would now these days use these just under the skin dissolving sutures, which usually means nothing to remove, nothing to snip off, and it's all just hidden under the skin.
I mean, can you actually ask this? Is this a reasonable question to ask your obstetrician about the wound closure?
Oh, look, I think so. I mean, I think we're now at the stage of medicine where it's very much a two-way conversation. I think patients should definitely feel empowered to ask all those sorts of questions. It may be that the reply is, this is how I've done it for so many years, and to do it a different way is not something I'm used to doing, but it's certainly worth opening up the line of conversation. And I think that's really important in modern medical practice of in any field. It's all about communication and giving patients options and coming to a joint sort of agreement about how things will happen, whether it's wound closure or how they're planning to have their baby or all sorts of things. So definitely I would hope patients would feel the ability to ask the question and have a discussion.
Although I have to say it's not a zone that gets shown in public much. No. If you're not a Kardashian, no. I don't think.
Yes, definitely. There are a number of ways to close skin, and you may find that each obstetrician has a slight variation of the same theme, how they like to do things.
The people that haven't had that sort of surgery before, it's a bit concerning about, you know, how long do things take for the wound to heal up?
And what are you allowed to do is one of the questions. So obviously the first few days we do encourage women to get up and mobilise, because they need enough pain relief to do that, because early mobilisation is good at preventing things like clots in legs and helps to get the bowels working again, helps to get the lungs inflated nicely. But really that first week or so is just mobilising, self-cares, baby cares, that's about all. One of the big questions is, when can I drive a car? And there's not an absolute black and white answer to that, because really it depends on how quickly people recover. So when it comes to driving, what we really want is the person in control of the car to be able to do all the things safely. Steer the wheel, look over your shoulder, slam on the brakes, you know, if need be, without any hesitation, because there's still pain or fatigue from sleepless nights and those sorts of things. So it's a little different person to person, but usually we would say somewhere around about the 3-week mark most people are able to drive a car.
And that's really important that you get your surgeon's sign off on that, because I do know someone, albeit overseas, who drove within the sort of recommended period and didn't have her doctor's sign off, and actually did have an accident and was completely liable. The insurance company wouldn't pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. So here I don't think that you actually need a written certificate from a doctor to say, I'm now fit to drive a car. But obviously if someone drove on day one, that would be a clearly incapacitated driver. But certainly my patients will say to me, when can I start driving? And I give them that spiel, and somewhere around 3 weeks it's fine. Yeah. And usually that can be a bit longer or shorter.
How was the recovery?
Well, actually, that is probably the one thing I had no idea about, no perception of. You know, you learn a bit about the C-section and what it is there to do, but it's very, well, I didn't get any sense that it was a major surgery, which of course it is. And you can't get out of bed for a day plus. And I couldn't walk to the letterbox for a week and so on. And, you know, it is really debilitating for somebody who is generally a pretty active person. You can't lift heavy things. You have to be in a certain position to lift your baby and make sure that they're safe. And people have to kind of ferry things to you in bed, which is, you know, nice for a little while, but actually it does get a bit old after a while. And I think all up, for me to be able to go on a walk around the block, it took me probably 5 weeks to be comfortable with that, which is an enormous amount of time.
Do you find that some patients need to be talked out of having an elective cesarean? I mean, what are the reasons for actually trying to go through a vaginal birth?
Yeah, so that's a very involved question.
It is, I know.
Something that I think the whole community of obstetricians and midwives and women are trying to find a good answer to. There's no question the caesar rates are rising. In my experience, that's a combination of factors. It's the fact that women are starting to defer childbirth till a bit later in life, and there's certainly some evidence about effects on a woman's pelvic floor if they have their first ever vaginal birth later in life. There seems to be probably more long-term effect done in that. And I think there's also a lot of, with social media and so on, a lot of fear being generated around childbirth as well. And I'm sure that medicine has some part to play in that as well, because our job is to warn people of all the bad things that can happen if they choose a particular path either way. So I think we're seeing a rising number of women who choose to have a cesarean section, and a rising number of women who probably need to have a cesarean section. The World Health is often quoted as saying that there's no need to have a cesarean section rate more than about 10 or 15%, but that's them saying that that's the number needed to keep maternal and perinatal mortality. So that's the number needed to minimise the number of women and babies dying in childbirth. And I suppose in modern Western civilization, people have loftier goals than just surviving their pregnancy. They want to have good intact survival for themselves and their babies, and they're looking at lots of other outcomes than just mortalities. That's where it gets murky. That's where there's a lot of argument around what is safer and what is better. And it comes down to all sorts of factors: age of the mother, health of the mother, how many children they're planning or having, and lots of things like that. So no question that a vaginal birth that goes well is easier, is better for baby, easier for mum to recover from, probably minimal impact on her long-term health. But a vaginal birth that doesn't go well is certainly not so good for anybody, and it's very hard to predict before labour starts whether a vaginal birth is going to go well or not well. And so that's, I think, where the confusion lies.
You did have the extenuating circumstances, but did you feel worried about saying that you had a C-section to friends, or was that something that anybody took up in a negative way?
No, nobody was negative about it with me at all, and I'm so grateful for that, because you put enough pressure on yourself about these things, particularly when the message that you are receiving from all of the birthing books and the midwives and the institutions is that the preference is for a vaginal birth. And there's a lot of research about microbiota and, you know, how that is really important for the birth. And you feel, well, I felt quite a lot of guilt around not being able to do that for my baby, and that it was in some way a second-rate way to give birth. Even though logically I knew that it was the right decision for my baby, we were very healthy at the end. We had a healthy baby. She was fine. I was fine. There was the inconvenience of a fairly long recovery, but that was nothing compared to having a baby that was happy and healthy and delivered well.
For anybody that thinks it's the easier path, that's not always the case, is it?
Definitely not.
I guess the difficulty in a cesarean birth is really the recovery, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the people who, I suppose if you want to talk down cesarean section, it would be, yes, there is a slightly higher rate of things like blood clots in legs, and you know, we try to manage that with blood thinners. More risk of infections in the uterus, obviously in the wound. If you don't have a wound, you can't get a wound infection, and longer recovery time. But you know, again, things like chances of not surviving your birth is the same whether you have a planned caesar or a vaginal birth. You know, people talk about the economics of birthing, and it's cheaper to have on the health system for vaginal birth than a caesar. So there's all these little things that kind of interplay into it. Yeah, it's a complex discussion to have, and each woman I think also brings some of their own personal experience and friends' experience and family experiences into that discussion, and that weighs, I think, a lot on the final decision.
And you always have to remember, especially if it's not a planned C-section, the things that happen at the time, you're making the best decision with all the information that you have at the time.
Yes, I think, so that's the group, I think, that mostly need debrief after birth. So a woman who's decided to have a caesar for a medical reason or for her own reasons and has a caesar, presumably that goes reasonably okay, are normally pretty at peace for that. And women who wanted a vaginal birth and have a successful vaginal birth are usually pretty at peace with that. Sometimes it doesn't go so well. But it's the women who wanted a vaginal birth and it's morphed into an emergency caesar are the ones that obviously need to have some feedback and debriefing. And certainly, I think one of the ways to minimise that trauma for them is to involve them in it at every decision. This is what we think we should do next. These are the options. And so that they feel like they've made those decisions through the labour and have been involved in that final decision to have a caesarean and feel that they know what's going on and empowered with the actual decisions. And that, to some degree, I think helps them to come to terms that they'd have given it a good go and that was ended up as a necessary thing.
Dr. James Orford, obstetrician and gynaecologist in private and public practice on the Sunshine Coast. And my lovely colleague Prue Bentley talking about her fairly dramatic birth story, which started perfectly but ended a long way from their original plan. And it's funny, we did talk about this later and laughed that there's so much more to becoming a parent than the birth story. But it is still a huge thing, especially for your first baby. And when things don't go to plan, that can be really difficult as well. You've been listening to Baby Talk. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.